I think we're entering a period of disinflation going forward, but I think that the inflation rate is going to remain high and that rate of disinflation is going to be low, right? So if we have that type of scenario, I would think this portfolio would still do well. So is it really all about the rate of disinflation that we're talking about?
Rate of disinflation is by far the most important driver. If you're a tactical asset allocator or somebody who's trying to have an idea what asset performance could be in the next 3 to 6 months, you have to get close with your prediction to what the rate of disinflation will be.
Welcome to Wealthion. I'm Wealthion founder Adam Taggart. Thanks for joining us for part two of our interview with bond expert Alfonso Pecatiello. If you haven't yet watched part one of this discussion with Alf, in which he predicts why asset prices likely have farther to fall as the central banks wage their war on economic demand, head over to our channel at youtube.com/Wealthion and watch it there first. It sets the context for the investment themes we discuss in this video. We also tell you how to watch bonus footage of Alf explaining what inspired him to leave behind the status of managing a $20 billion bond portfolio in favor of helping to educate regular people to become more informed investors. So be sure to stick around to the end for that. All right, well, let's get started watching part two of our video interview with Alfonso Pecatiello. All right, so let's get to your market outlook from here. You've already said you think while stocks were kind of in that sort of not too expensive, not too cheap, you still believe that there's room to reprice further down. So I guess my question is, I'll let you just sort of share your market outlook. Before you do, though, I just want to give you some props. So I last had you back on this program in the middle of March. You shared how your public portfolio, I know you have sort of like a public portfolio and then your own personal portfolio. That's done great. I mean, you tell me what the returns have been, but you were short risk assets like the Russell, which has gone down a lot since then. You were short high yield bonds, which have gone down. You were short Bitcoin, which continued to go down. You were positioned for tightening spreads between the short term and long term bonds. I'm not sure if that one worked out, but you tell us. And then you predicted the S&P would be below 4,000. It was around 4,200 at the time. We've certainly hit that target too. So I just want to congratulate you on sticking your neck out and largely getting it right.
Thank you, Adam. The returns year to date are 20% positive. This has been probably my best year in global macro trading. Disclaimer, I am often wrong. So my hit rate on these tactical trades, let's say with a horizon of about 3 months, generally speaking, that's my horizon on this portfolio. I have a long-term portfolio too. My hit rate is generally 55%. So I'm right once and I'm wrong once. But the trick is try to be wrong small and right big. So that's basically what, it's all about risk management, position sizing, correlations, and all of that that I learned by running a $20 billion book. But the return has been good because I've been leaning short risk assets the entire year. And then I looked at what was the best risk reward at that time. So it used to be Bitcoin and then maybe high yield bonds. And then I just maneuvered around. And right now I've changed a bit my positions. I am short the S&P 500 still running. And the next target is 3750, 37, around 3700, 3750. That's my next target. I don't exclude it could go lower. What I do normally is if I'm running a profitable position, then I would just move my profit targets higher in P&L terms, in this case, lower in price terms. And if I hit the next one, then I will move it lower again in price terms, et cetera, et cetera. And if we have a sharp reprice against me, then I will just take my profits. I will be happy with it. And this allows me to run the trend if the trend is working my way, and instead cut the losses if I'm completely wrong. Because ex ante, I don't know whether I'm going to be right or wrong. I don't have a crystal ball. I just have a macro analysis data-driven that spits me out some outcomes, and then I look at the risk reward in different trades.
Great. And I just want to note here, because we're going to have the financial advisors on in a little bit, that this is an example of hedging your trade. It doesn't sound like you're exactly using stops, but this is kind of what a trailing stop does in your portfolio. So just want to show the smart people, you know, like Alf, are all about risk management.
It's all about risk management. So I am exactly using trailing profit targets and trailing stops in a very systematic way. And the other way to do risk management properly, as I will explain on the article on the Macro Compass, which comes out next Monday, will be position sizing. So investing 1% of your portfolio in Bitcoin is completely different than 1% of your portfolio in a bond, because the underlying volatility and the characteristic of these asset classes are definitely different. So when you size a position, you should also consider the volatility of each asset class and the correlations to your portfolio, and not just blindly allocate a percentage of capital. You should always assume that you can be wrong. That's the other thing. But stop with the risk management stuff. Right now, my positions are three. I'm short the S&P 500, targeting 3750 as the next target. I am short in corporate spreads in the US. You can actually do that. There are a couple of very cool products, two ETFs. One is HYGH. So it's the HYG ETF, the famous one, high yield bond. But the H at the end of ETF means hedge. So what an ETF tracks is only the credit spreads. It will basically replicate the yield of a high yield corporate bond minus the yield of a treasury, just literally the credit spread. And I have shorted that ETF. You can buy puts on it, you can outright short it. So there is a way to replicate a credit spread trade. I expect these credit spreads to widen. If you expect those to widen, become bigger, then you short the HYGH ETF. There is also the LQDH. Same story, but on investment grade bonds in the US. You have a question, Adam, on these ETFs?
Well, I was just going to say, make sure I understand it, but I think I do. Is HYGH is basically going long that the spread is going to tighten, which is why if you think the spreads are going to widen, you're shorting it.
That is correct. And it's purely a play on the spreads. Where interest rates go, I don't care. The H at the end of it is hedged. So where treasury yields go in this thing, I don't care. What I care about is the spread. So the difference in yield between a junk corporate bond in America and a treasury. And if you buy the ETF, you're betting that these credit spreads will shrink. I expect these credit spreads will keep on widening. They will become bigger. And
Great.
therefore, shorter the ETF.
And let me just sort of reposition this in folks' minds here. So if you've been listening to this conversation closely, Alf and I have been talking a lot about how the cost of capital is repricing, and it's repricing because people are basically we've you could say we've mispriced risk for the past decade. We haven't worried about it, so we haven't demanded greater compensation for taking on greater risk. And I think both Alf and I believe that the world is now shifting back to the way it used to work, where people said, you know what, risk is understanding risk is really important, and I'm going to do my homework. And if this thing's more risky than that thing, I'm going to demand a higher yield for it. And that is going to push spreads wider on all sorts of different instruments. But of course, one of the ones that would feel it the most would be high yield. So totally get the logic of why you're doing this, Alf.
That's correct. And the last trade will be a similar trade for your European audience, which is the situation in Europe is obviously even more complicated because of the energy situation. Inflation is very high in Europe too. And the European Central Bank is now all of a sudden turning from the perennial dovish stance to a, oh my God, we actually need to do something. And Europe has inherent fragilities, one of which is Italy, Greece, Spain, the peripheral countries, which have a much weaker balance sheet than Germany or Finland or the Netherlands and the Northern European bloc.
What are called the pigs at
Yeah,
times.
yes, they were called the pigs, which is not a name I enjoy because I'm Italian myself. But right now, I think the spreads between Italian government bonds and the safer versions of the German government bonds, again, are about widen. And you can do that by a couple of ETFs in Europe as well or trading futures. The overall stance, guys, is that I am short equities and I think credit spreads will continue to widen. And that reflects my underlying macro analysis and the inputs I'm getting from the Macro Compass, which is my main model, that the economy is slowing down at the same time central banks are tightening monetary policy, which is the worst possible combination for risk assets. Then I screen them all and I look for the best risk reward expressions. And I think the equity market and the credit market are still underappreciating the extent of this pain. And I think there is a bit more to go there.
Okay. It's okay if you don't know off the top of your head, but just we do have a fair amount of European viewers of this channel. Do you know the ETFs that you're trading there off the top of your head?
So there is a Elixir ETF, which is basically there is a levered and an unlevered version. The two times Elixir inverse ETF on the BTPs that will allow you to be short BTPs, which is the nickname for Italian government bonds. And
Okay.
then there should be a very similar ETF, which allows you to be long the German government bonds. So if you buy both, you're buying an inverse on the BTP and a normal one on the Bunds, on the German government bond. You are basically mimicking the trade. You're again betting on the spread between Italy and Germany, which is my idea. Alternatively, you can do it via futures, which are very liquid. There is a future underlying for Italy and a future underlying for Germany as well.
Okay, great. And folks, just going to make my, perennial note here that unless you're experienced making these kind of trades yourself, you should do so under the guidance of a professional financial advisor. Wealthion has official, advisors that can officially recommend here in the U.S., and we do so by following SEC regulations. We don't have a European partner that we have a sort of an official relationship with yet. We're still navigating the all the regulatory aspects of that. But I do have a firm there that is showing themselves to be like-minded. And if you'd like to have sort of an unofficial introduction to them, feel free just to email us at info@wealthion.com. If you do, I can make that connection. all right. So fantastic. We'll wrap things up here, Alf, because you've given us so much time. Real quick though, I just two things. One is I look at this, totally understand it. I think what could make this underperform or what could go wrong here? And I think the worst thing to happen here would be a Fed and other central bank pivot.
That is
Right?
correct. So the worst thing that can ever happen to this position and this book is if inflation would slow down markedly from here, Adam. Because if it does, then the ECB is not worried anymore. The Fed is not worried anymore. And they can be like, yeah, okay, sure, we need to bring interest rates higher, but not as much. We don't need to dampen demand that much. And that it reprices the bond market. And from the bond market, the appetite that people have then to buy risk assets will increase. And so I'm short S&P and I will bleed. I'm short credit spreads and I will bleed there as well. So my main enemy in this reading is that inflation will slow down, giving central banks an ability to actually, take the foot off the gas pedal a bit compared to what we have seen. What I've learned though is that if facts change, then I will change my mind as well.
Right.
One of the things about investing is that there are no gurus. The people that have a that are married to one narrative. This is one of the most dangerous thing to do
Fastest way to lose money, but yes.
because I don't know what inflation is going to be printing, if exactly is going down at a certain pace or not. But once I see that facts are perhaps changing, I can adjust my positions accordingly and be very nimble about it. The main feature of the best hedge fund managers and CIOs that I know is that they can turn their position on a dime if facts are changing. And I try to do the same.
Okay, so just because you mentioned that, then I can see how this portfolio, as you said, is very vulnerable to a market slowdown in inflation. I think we're entering a period of disinflation going forward, but I think that the inflation rate is going to remain high, and that rate of disinflation is going to be low, right? So if we have that type of scenario, I would think this portfolio would still do well. So is it really all about the rate of disinflation that we're talking about?
Rate of disinflation is by far the most important driver. If you're a tactical asset allocator or somebody who's trying to have an idea what asset performance could be in the next 3 to 6 months, you have to get close with your prediction to what the rate of disinflation will be. If the rate of disinflation is fast enough to meet or even exceed the Fed's most rosy expectations, they can slow things down and risk assets will probably benefit from it. Equities will benefit from it, the bond market will benefit from it because the Fed doesn't need to destroy demand that much. If the rate of disinflation is low, so inflation slows down on a year-on-year term, but it slows down to 5%. 5% is a heck away from price stability around
Right.
2%. That would actually even complicate, if you ask me, the situation for risk assets because you would have to expect a prolonged period of tighter financial conditions. You'd have to expect a semi-Volcker move from Powell at that point to really convince the market that inflation is going to slow down to 2%. So that could be even worse. So calling the rate of disinflation is by far the most important tactical macroeconomic prediction you need to get somehow right over the next 3 to 6 months.
All right. And it's really interesting because I think people understand inflation, they understand deflation. Disinflation doesn't get talked much about at all, really, in the public media. And I do think that it's probably one of the most important things to understand right now, given the nuances we've just been peeling back here from. So folks, if you don't understand disinflation, get online, go to Investopedia, whatever. Just it's going to be really important to understand how that's going to influence the dynamics from here. All right. So wonderful time here as always. Alf, thanks so much. For people that have enjoyed this, want to go learn more about you and your work, where should they go?
The Macro Compass. It's my free newsletter. There is no charge. It's published every week. And it gives you financial education, macroeconomic insights into my models, and also my portfolio updates, investment ideas, how to position for a certain macro environment. It's the macrocompass.substack.com. Again, guys, it's free. If you want to check it out, we have about, I think, 50,000 investors reading the newsletter.
Wow.
So it's growing fast, and I'm very happy with the support that people have been giving me. If you want to pay a visit, go do that. And also on Twitter, my account is at the handle is @macroalf. And there, of course, the space is much more limited, so it's going to be a bit more of a Twitter-like sort of content, but I try to deliver informative threads as well, talking about the fixed income market, the Federal Reserve meeting, and everything else, and try to entertain you guys with some pizza picture as well from time to time.
Oh, yeah, it's a great resource. It's one of my favorite Twitter feeds. So thank you. So, Alf, what we'll do is when we edit this, we'll put up the links to both the Macro Compass Substack address as well as your Twitter handle there. One question I forgot to ask, just give me your 20-second answer on it. Gold. I think I did this to you last time. I tacked it on right at the end. My recollection is you like it, and you were holding some in your personal portfolio. Has your outlook on gold changed at all, given what's happened since the last time we talked?
So for the long term, I don't think that things have changed. We will expand more credit. We will expand the cheaper borrowing rates to make the system oil once we have mended from the situation right now. So gold benefits from a situation where the amount of fiat money expands in the system, spendable fiat money, so credit expands and real rates drop over time. Right now, it's the opposite. The amount of spendable money has shrunk because the credit machine has to stop. And on top of it, real interest rates have been going up. So that doesn't make gold my preferred tactical holding, let's say.
All right, great. Thanks, Alf. All right, folks. Well, look, Alf has been kind enough to answer a bonus question for us in a different video on how he made the transition from being a multi-billion-dollar bond portfolio manager to becoming an independent, educator for people about how to invest in today's macro environment. If you want to watch that, just go to wealthion.com/Alf. Watch that after this video. Alf, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for coming on. Looking forward to having you on as soon as possible again.
Adam, it's my pleasure the whole time, and great job at Wealthium. Keep on delivering that.
All right. Well, now's the time of the program where we bring in the lead partners from New Harbor Financial, one of the financial advisory firms officially recommended by Wealthion, to get their reaction to what Alf just said, but also to talk about what the markets have been doing since last week. I'm joined as usual by lead partners Mike Preston and John Lodra. Guys, great to see you. Mike, why don't we start with you? Let's hear your reaction to what Alf said there, and then we'll get into talking about what the markets are doing.
Hi, Adam. Nice to see you again, and thanks for welcoming us back. Really enjoyed that presentation. I had to laugh at the t-shirt. I love his t-shirt. It said, "Central banks don't print money; they print reserves." It's not money. That's cool. I mean, it reminds me of other people that have said the same, like Mike Maloney said. It's not that the central bank is printing money; they're printing currency. So there is a difference. And this talk was all about the Federal Reserve and what central banks are doing, which is what really it's the only game in town right now and has been for a long time. And the question is, what's going to happen in the near future based on their actions? We clearly have a slowing, blowing economy, Alf talked about, and really tight credit spreads have helped companies, particularly zombie companies, last longer than they really might have otherwise done. The credit spread simply means that the price of credit in the marketplace above the risk-free rate, i.e. the treasury bills, has been at a historic low. And that's really juiced the economy. It's incentivized companies to invest more, to buy other companies, to hire more people. That's really changed in the last few months as even long-term treasury rates or 10-year treasury rates, for instance, had capped out above 3% from somewhere in the ones a little while ago. But high yield bonds or lower grade credit, the yields have gone up even more. So when that happens, you have a widening in the credit spread above the risk-free rate, and it really slows down the economy. And that's what the Fed wants, Al says. You know, the Fed needs the economy to slow down. They think that they're going to have what's called a controlled demolition, as Danielle pointed out the other day, Danielle DiMartino Booth. And furthermore, Al said the Fed won't pivot. There's a lot of talk about where the strike price for the Fed put is. At what point will the Fed become uncomfortable with a drop in the S&P 500, for instance, to pivot and say, you know what, we're all done. We were just kidding, or we weren't kidding, but we now think it's gone far enough and we're going to juice the economy again. Alpha saying here, they're not going to do that. They've got a lot of tolerance for downside here. Don't underestimate the amount of downside risk that exists in this market that the Fed is willing to tolerate. Alf had said that he doesn't remember another Fed president that was tightening into a recession or into a slowing economy. You pointed out that Paul Volcker did, which is indeed true. So it certainly hasn't been since Paul Volcker that we've had a situation where the Fed was easing, tightening into a decelerating economy. And you see a lot about the Fed mistake, that the Fed's making a mistake. It's not a mistake that they're tightening at this point. Really, it was a mistake that they blew such a gargantuan bubble in the first place. And that's really what we should keep in mind, that this market remains full of risk, that the price at which the Fed is likely to decide to change course is much, much lower in the market than it is right now. And you should trade and invest accordingly.
Yeah, Mike, you're reminding me of a tweet that a mutual hero of ours just put out the other day, John Hussman. And he basically said, hey, we shouldn't be blaming the Fed for the losses that are happening in the market right now. He said, we should be blaming them for blowing the bubble in the first place. Right. And I sort of responded saying, yeah, it's kind of like, we shouldn't blame the Fed for the ashes. We should blame them for packing the house full of nitroglycerin and C4 and TNT and dynamite, right? They created the conditions that's now, we're all having to pay for here. Alf had mentioned two things that really struck me, and it sounds like they struck you too, which is one that he said that what we're really seeing right now is pretty unprecedented. And, Alf managed a large bond portfolio for a long time. And, to sort of see him sort of wide-eyed looking at the conditions right now and saying, my gosh, this is just a playbook that, most investors who are active today haven't seen before. It's just really important that we take a moment and really realize that, right? In fact, Alf was saying like it's literally the opposite of what investors have been used to for the past couple of decades. And so we just need to make sure that folks, are getting that message that, look, a lot of the things that worked very predictably for most people's adult investing careers may not really be applying going forward. They certainly haven't been applying this year. And when Alf did the total for us and said that $25 trillion worth of market value has been lost so far this year, that just blew my mind. As I said when he mentioned it, if you had pulled any of us at December 31st and said, hey, by the time June rolls around, the market will have lost $25 trillion, I don't think any of us would have believed it, even though we could imagine that it should, the reasons for why it should happen, to have that much disappear that quickly is just mind-boggling. All right, John, let me go to you. What else do you have to add to what Mike said?
Yeah, no, I think that was a great encapsulation of a very fascinating and in-depth discussion. I'd love to just, pick up on what you just kind of emphasized there, Adam, because, for many folks and part of our jobs as financial advisors for our clients and prospective clients is, keeping it simple, cutting through all the techno talk. You can go on for hours talking about all the esoteric things that monetary policy is and has done over the last, you know, several years or decades. But the simple reality is what is happening right now, and it's right before our very eyes to be seen, and there's the Fed is saying it, is what we have done in the last 10 years and plus, we're now doing the opposite. So the simple conclusion should be that what we have seen in markets over the last 10 years should be, until they change course again, and it's a big until, we should see the opposite. We should see, you know, rallies being sold, not every dip being bought. We should see, you know, people not thinking about markets as, well, there is no alternative to cash at the bank, so I have to invest in risky stocks or risky junk bonds or whatever. Flip all that on its head. And, you know, any Seinfeld fans out there, where George Costanza decides, hey, I'm going to do the opposite because that's going to work. I think that's the mindset folks are going to want to have, because we do have opposite day now. And what has worked the last 10 years, generally speaking, we think there's, and there's good reason to expect the same mechanistic result, but in opposite direction going forward here than we've seen in the past 10 years, for example.
Yeah, you know, I hate to sort of embrace this, but it may be the right thing to do, right? Which is, there was the mantra, don't fight the Fed, right? That was issued many times over the past decade. And you know what? It turned out to be right. You know, if you fought the Fed, if you went short the markets, whatnot, you just got steamrolled again and again and again. And now the Fed has flipped policy. And you know what I hear you saying, John, and I hear a lot of other people that I interview say the same thing, which is, hey, don't fight the Fed. The Fed is destroying demand. They now want to bring asset prices down. Don't get in the way of that Fed steamroller, or else it's going to run over you. You know, maybe folks, that is right. Is just, in this world we live in, the Fed has it's such a big influence. You know, you fight it at your peril here. We talked a lot both with Alf and in previous videos here about all the reasons why we think lower prices could go ahead. And to your point, John, it's opposite day in the markets or whatever. That said, though, I do want to bring up something you mentioned in our last video together, where you were quick to caution people that even though the probability may be that lower prices do lie ahead later on this year, that if we're entering a bear market and we're not that many percentage points away from an officially declared one, every bear market in history, no matter how far down it went from beginning to end, was punctuated with lots of sharp rallies, some of them quite extreme. So you have to be both mentally prepared and portfolio positioned for those, or at least, don't put all your chips on the markets only going down from here side of the table, because those rallies may vaporize a lot of your position. So John, let me just let you add anything else.
Yeah,
to that.
No, absolutely. That is a constant thing we'd like to refrain. You know, things don't move in straight lines. And ironically, in major bear markets, there's more head fakes, I guess you might say, than in a straight up bull market. You know, in the last, take for example, the rise in the market from the COVID sell-off in March 2020 through the recent high, you know, there was barely a down day. Obviously there were down days, but more or less it was straight up. What we're seeing now, and what we've seen in major bear markets of the past, and you know, can't say for sure this is going to be just like those, or it even is one, we think it's probable that it is you get some pretty massive counter rallies in the case of the down move in a bear market. And so it's more tricky in a sense, because there's so many more opportunities to get head faked into thinking that the trend is over, meaning the downturn is over and we're going higher. Just in the last couple of days, we are recording this on May 26th, we've seen a pretty strong short-term bounce in broad equity markets here in the US. You know, there were some, you know, technical oversold levels there. So from a technical standpoint, it was almost textbook. But you know, again, it's likely going to be something that should be prudently sold into rather than piled onto. In fact, we did a little bit of that. We did some equity nibbling in our client portfolios for those that are large enough to allow us to use options to hedge. We did add some exposure in recently, almost at a recent low, and we peeled that off today. We've got a nice bounce. We got met our profit objective on that short-term trade, and we peeled that off. So this is the kind of market you want to, we think, lighten up into rallies. And for those folks who are still heavily invested, maybe more than they know they should be, this is a great time to become unparalyzed. And I don't make that comment lightly. It's a very tough thing to do, but this is a great opportunity to start to nibble or de-nibble, I should say, start to sell and deleverage and lighten up risk, because it's very clear that we likely will have some more pain ahead.
Okay, great. You took the answer to where I was leading the question. So that's great. So yes. So we are now seeing, a bounce in the markets. Could it go substantially higher from here? Maybe, we don't know. But what I'm hearing you underscore, it sounds like your position has not changed, that you're going to use this short-term strength as an opportunity to sell at higher prices, as opposed to saying, okay, this is the bottom, let's load up. Yeah, okay. All right. So Mike, coming to you now. So, we're now, the S&P is now back above 4,000 here. I know that Powell spoke a lot this week. Markets are digesting it. I guess clearly they like what they heard. Did Powell say anything to really give the markets any deserved optimism here? Or is this the markets maybe not believing Powell's projected commitment to continuing the rate hikes?
It's always hard to analyze Fed words. It's difficult. I can't always understand it, to be honest. But Powell came out and said, or the Fed as a whole came out and said, we're going to continue on our course. We are determined to continue to tighten. We're determined to keep inflation reasonable. I'm not really sure, to be honest, why the market took off on that. It doesn't seem like it would be great news, but the market did. I think that maybe they expected stronger words, or the market expected stronger words. And today there was another economic print. I can't recall what it was. I read this morning, but it was weak. There was another weak print today, and that caused the market to take off. In the case of the NASDAQ, I think it was 3%, and S&P a couple percent. There was a huge rally today on the 26th on Thursday. And that's after the futures were down overnight and at the open. So I don't know that you can really chalk it up to anything more than an oversold bounce. Our bias is definitely towards the fact that this is a bear market rally. Of course, this bear market rally is probably one of the more anticipated ones I've ever seen in my career, and I've been doing this since the late 90s. The buy the dip tendency is instant and constant, and almost everyone wants it. Everyone wants in. And you could see it in the tape by watching the market. And yet again, we got this bear market rally, and it kind of fed on itself here the last couple of days with some bad economic news. John just mentioned what happens in the bear market is you get these huge rallies. The S&P, I just did the numbers, up 6.4% from the low just in a few days. High yield bonds up 4.5% in a couple days from the low. These are huge moves. And Alf mentioned an ETF in there that I didn't know about, actually, that I hadn't followed before, HYGH, which is a way to play the credit spreads. If you look at HYGH, it's not a position in our portfolio. I'm just using it as an example. That's had an even more monstrous move than high yield bonds themselves. So clearly, the market or the people in the market are kind of semi-euphoric in a very quick way. I kind of think it's going to be short-lived and ill-advised, but again, everyone's trying to catch this turn. So I my best guess here, Adam, is that maybe we turn around pretty quickly, maybe go another day or two, but so far this is pretty textbook that we've had this sharp rally, and we'll see what happens the remainder of, well, there's only one more day in this week, but next week as well. If we roll over again and start to head down, all those people that tried to catch this turn will again sell and or stop out. And that's what can lead to a much more vicious downside move. And, one more point quickly is there's all this talk about controlled demolition and the Fed will be able to engineer a soft landing. And I know what I'm going to say maybe borders on being political. And in a way, I hope they're not successful in doing that. And it's kind of a two-edged sword, because if we have a crash or an uncontrolled downside move, a lot of people will be hurt. But if they're able to engineer softly all the way down what they kind of created in such extreme fashion on the way up, then I think there'll be little hope for what I really hope happens, and that there's maybe some more controls about central banking, a little more knowledge about what central banking does and the risks that it poses. Hopefully, we can get to a point where we investors can think about more than just what the Fed does or says, because that's 80 or 90% of what most people in media, including us, talk about these days, because literally that's all that's matter.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a fantasy of mine I have frequently is hopefully within our lifetimes, we'll actually be able to invest based on fundamentals and not what a group of less than 10 people decide around a table. All right. All right. So, Mike, let me stick with you just for one second here on gold. I asked Alf way too briefly about it, and he basically said he still likes it. But a question that I think folks are increasingly asking right now is, if we get one of these big rallies, right, what will that mean for gold? Because gold, you know, did well early this year. It sold off pretty hard. You know, it does tends to do pretty well as sort of like a worry trade, a fear trade. And as people become less fearful, and maybe they're selling gold, right? So if they're having a relief rally, even though, you know, a lot of gold holders are hoping that, all right, gold sold off a lot, maybe it's oversold now and it's going to bounce too. But you can make the contrary argument that, well, if we're having a relief rally, that means that people are feeling more optimistic. They don't have the nervousness as much anymore, and that gold is going to lose a bit for that. Do you guys have any particular strong opinion on this right now?
Well, first of all, let me say that gold just seems to be asleep, you know, just sitting here at 1850, and you certainly have a lot of compassion for gold and silver bulls, ourselves included, because almost everything else has participated in the bigger sense in this bull market of the last bunch of years. But gold and silver have kind of sat out. I mean, it's not totally the truth, but gold seems boring right now, and that it just doesn't really do much of anything, no matter what the market does. The dollar has gotten a little weaker in recent days, and yet gold still sits there around 1850. I mean, it's up a little bit off of its lows. I guess I'd only say this, that the bullish breakout that I've talked about many times in these programs is still intact. And the fact that gold seems to be in a slumber might be a good thing. You know, we get a surprise breakout to the upside, it can feed upon itself. I often wonder if gold and silver might be, after all, the right trade over a long period of time, after everything else is found out to be bubbles of some sort, including Bitcoin and stock market and that kind of thing. Gold just kind of sauntered along in its own way, and then, you know, eventually become the last one standing. That's, I mean, it's only speculation on my part, but it certainly could be that. And gold is not giving us any reason to really doubt it here, but it is, for lack of a better word, a little bit more boring lately.
All right. Well, you know, boring or not, boring and still being up for the year is pretty darn great versus most other assets out there. So I think a lot of people would take boring right now versus the maybe the tech stocks they were holding at the beginning of the year. Your part about, you know, gold kind of being the last man standing, it reminds me of that Winston Churchill quote of, I love Americans. You can always count on them to do the right thing after they've exhausted every other potential option. You know, maybe that's what capital's doing, is it's just exhausting every other option before it finally decides to come home. And you mentioned Bitcoin real briefly, Mike. I don't have any stats on this to be able to speak to, but part of me does wonder that if the bloom comes off the crypto market rose enough, and I'm not making an anti-crypto point, I'm just saying that there's been a lot of losses in that space so far this year. Could we see a rotation of capital from that space where people went into crypto for a lot of the same reasons why old school investors own gold, but crypto was their first entry into this sort of, all right, I want an asset that's not someone else's liability, and I want something that's, you know, separate from the fiat system and all that type of stuff. Could we start seeing some of that money rotate into the precious metals space as new incremental flows, as people realize either I want to switch from crypto to gold, or at least I want to diversify a little bit out of crypto into something that I like philosophically, and gold's the closest thing out there?
And that could be the case, Adam. I'm not sure. I'd have to think about what the relative numbers are there. For Bitcoin, I think it's capped out at 21 million coins times the number of coins. That market cap is going to be relatively small relative to the broad stock market.
It's half a trillion right now.
Half a trillion. Okay. So that's actually pretty large. That's actually pretty large. I mean, sure. I mean, if some of the shine comes off of Bitcoin and that capital comes out, the types of people that own Bitcoin are the, to put it simply, I suppose, the kind of the anti-central banking people, right? And so where else do you go? If you don't trust centralized government, centralized control and management, where else do you go? You know, gold is an obvious place to go. So absolutely, I could see that feeding into it.
Okay, great. And, you know, gold and the miners, they're tied, but they sometimes trade differently from one another. And to my question about what will happen in a relief rally here, hopefully those folks that have been holding on to gold equities and have ridden them down in the past, you know, month or so, a rally in equities generally, hopefully some of that shine will come off on the miners themselves. All right, John, coming back to you, beginning to wrap things up here. I got a really kind of a life highlight where I got a voicemail the other day from somebody that took the time to track down my private cell phone number and just said, hey, look, I'm a Wealthion viewer. I've been listening a lot to learning a lot from the videos on this channel. And I find that my portfolio is up this year based upon actions I took listening to you and your guest experts. And I just wanted to say just thanks. You know, and that for me just encapsulated the entire mission behind why I founded Wealthion. It was to help people become better informed so that they could make more prudent decisions about protecting and hopefully building their wealth. And the fact that at least this one person was able to do that was just incredibly fulfilling and heartwarming for me. But you guys manage capital for people on a daily basis. And you guys are, I believe, still at least close to flat for the year in a year where the markets are still down fairly substantially. So maybe I'm trying to toot your horn a little bit here for you, but I'm also just sort of trying to raise the point of the value that a financial advisor who helps you create and stick to a financial plan can really have for the type of markets that we're in here. Is there any other context that you can provide for the viewers today on that?
Yeah, well, the first thing I'd like to say is, you know, we hate to toot our own horn because we know that humility is really, really important in what we do. Obviously we strive to provide good value over the full relationship with our clients, but there's times where the horn tooting isn't going to be so easy to come by.
Yeah, that there are times when the markets confound you guys.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yep. We're here to hear that as well. You know, we very much appreciate, and we do get very heartwarming compliments from our clients. But there's times where clients are rightfully and concerned about, hey, am I positioned the right way given how markets are going? And sometimes we become the bearers of this distress and angst of those folks, and that's our job, and we know that. So it's not always one way, but similar anecdote there, Adam, to you getting that voicemail. We oftentimes will through the, you know, and certainly through the relationship we have with Wealthion, where we get introduced to folks who you know, seek the advice of one of your endorsed advisors, of which we're one, of course. We'll talk to someone, give them, you know, liberal amounts of time, you know, and then we might hear from them, you know, once or twice more, but then they go quiet. And then we might 3 years later hear from them saying, you know, I really valued the conversation we had, and I'd really like to talk again about, you know, coming to have you work for us and manage our portfolios. That's a similar kind of thing. You know, we know we're planting seeds with our advice and counsel, and our clients when they want to germinate those seeds and have them grow in partnership with a firm like ours, we're very honored to do so. But it's an ultimate compliment when we can make an impression like that years later, they remember to reach out to us and say, now's the time. I think it's right time for us to start a relationship.
Great. And you know what I like about that anecdote too, is it underscores that, you know, these consultations that you guys offer, it's a conversation, and, you know, as we always say, there's no strings attached, it's totally free, all that kind of stuff. But you know, so there's no expectation the person has to work with you right away, right? So they can take that and they can sit on it for 3 years, germinate on it, and decide at some point, I want to take action, and whether they want to knock back on your door or on somebody else's, yeah, their choice.
We're at the point where, you know, we find success in just trying to help people. It may sound corny, But it's true, you know, getting off a call where we know we've added value, whether they become a client or not, we can go home at the end of the day and just feel good about that. Obviously, we run a business here and need to, in totality, support our team and our families and all that stuff. But there's nothing like just knowing you had a great call with a client or a prospective client, and they got something of value out of that. That's enough to fuel to the next day with a smile.
Well, that's what I appreciate about you guys and Lance, and what we're trying to create here at Wealthion is you know, when you get old enough where you have the white and the beards like we do, John, you know, it's not just all about the money. You know, we're as long as the businesses are viable, we just want to be making the difference that we hope to make in the world, right? And so for folks that are watching, actually, I've got some good news. If you're watching from outside the US, I want to manage expectations here in terms of timing, but I'm in discussions with firms both in Canada and in the EU, which can also take Australian clients too. So we should start being, hopefully in the next couple of months, I will hopefully be able to have those arrangements worked out where we will have an identified partner for Canadian viewers, as well as for European and Australian viewers, and probably New Zealand too. And those are the majority of the folks that have at least been emailing me so far saying, hey, I love the guys that you have on, but I can't work with them because they're in America. Can you please find an advisor for me? It looks like we're making good progress on that, but I'll update folks here more in the future as I have developments there. Lastly, I had a great conversation with Alf right at the end of recording with him that we had to cut out, and I made it a bonus video. But it's where he sort of describes his journey from being a, you know, what inspired him to leave his role managing $20 billion dollar portfolio of bonds at a relatively young age. I mean, he was a real sort of superstar in the portfolio management world, and he stepped off that wheel to basically do, you know, more of a mission-driven type of endeavor where he's just trying to help educate people about, you know, really what's going on in the macro world so that they can then make better choices in terms of allocating their wealth. If you're curious about that, folks, and it's actually, I really enjoyed it. It was a really fascinating discussion. Just go to wealthion.com/Alf at the end of this video and watch that. It's only like 10 minutes or something like that, but it's totally, totally interesting. All right, folks. Well, look, we'll wrap things up here. If you enjoyed Alf's appearance on this program, would like to see him come back on and see other great guests like him on this program in the future, please help support this channel by hitting the like button and then clicking the subscribe button below if you haven't already, as well as that little bell icon right next to it. John and Mike, thanks so much for joining me again. Whatever happens next week in the markets, we'll be dissecting it here. Everybody else, thanks so much for watching.
Thank you, Adam. And to at least our US listeners, we wish you all a happy Memorial Day weekend. Hope it's a relaxing one.
Thanks again, Adam. We'll see you next week.
If you'd like to schedule a consultation with one of the financial advisors at New Harbor Financial, simply go to wealthion.com. These consultations are completely free and there are no strings attached. The good folks at New Harbor will simply answer any questions you have about your investment goals or your portfolio and give you their best advice given their latest market outlook. They're willing to do this because they care about protecting people's wealth, and because Wealthion has connected them with so many thoughtful investors just like you over the past decade. We started doing this because so many people have approached us in frustration, looking for a solution because they're feeling out of alignment or downright ridiculed by the standard financial advisors who have been managing their money. You know the type. The kind that just pushes all of your money into the market, scoffs at the idea of owning gold, and when you bring up concerns about the market's sky-high valuations, they say, "Don't worry, the market will always take care of you." For many of the reasons discussed in today's video, we think this is one of the most challenging and treacherous times in history for investing. We strongly believe that today's investors are best served working in partnership with a conscientious professional financial advisor who understands the risks in play. Now, we're agnostic which professional advisor you work with, as long as they're good. If you're already working with one, that's fantastic. Stick with them. But if you don't, or are having trouble finding one you respect or trust, then consider talking to John and Mike and the team at New Harbor. Now, for those about to ask, yes, there's a business relationship between Wealthion and New Harbor, which we've put in place to make sure everything is handled according to SEC regulations. All the details on this are clearly provided on the Wealthion.com website. Also, it's important to note that New Harbor is able to work with U.S. citizens, green card holders, and those with existing assets in the USA. But for regulatory reasons, they aren't able to take on non-U.S. clients. All right, with all that said, if you'd like some insight and guidance on how to protect your wealth during this unprecedented time in the markets, go to wealthion.com to schedule your free consultation with the good folks at New Harbor. Thanks for watching.